The Entrepreneurs Advocacy presents Street Smart Sales, a combination of personality recognition techniques and physiognomy, a science of communication techniques based on recognizing traits in one's face. The presentation.
So, to have a sales journal means that you can track what's working and what's not working, and more importantly, what's not working. So, if you keep track of conversations, if you keep track of what's going on, what makes you feel really great about what you're doing, what weighs you down, my firm belief is that when you're working with somebody who you just are uncomfortable working with, quit it. Fire them. Send them somewhere else. I used to have this great thing that it made me feel so good that I used to, in the travel agency, have a lot of attorneys that wanted to use my agency because the Uniqlo franchise, when a flight's canceled and you're at the airport, you call a phone number instead of going to the desk where everybody else is standing in line for an hour to figure out their flight, and in 5 minutes you've got everything redone. So it was kind of a cool professional thing to have. And attorneys were the worst about paying their bills. And so I would give them one chance. And then I would forward them on to American Express. So I took American Express to their travel. And it always made me feel so good. I don't know what it was about that, getting rid of people who didn't pay me, that were extra effort, that, you know, always last minute, and I had to, you know, stop what I'm doing to take care of them. But it was really great to go, I don't need you. You know, you're giving me too much of a headache to even work with you. So think about what you're doing every month. And I know it's only been a month since we were in here the last class. It happens too quick. You know, every month goes by so rapidly, and here we are in September. And the sales journal is one of the things that you can use as a tool to make sure that you're doing what works for you, that you're conscious about the conversations and what's effective and what slows you down and all the things about it. So good job on getting the journal, Jerry. Take the plastic wrapping off the plate.
I'm waiting for the first sales call.
Bree was saying you have 84 pages.
What I'm doing, I'm doing not only particular conversations, if there's little bits that really seem meaningful I've heard somewhere, I'll jot notes down. It's very therapeutic. I love it. You know, when I review it periodically, but it's
right.
You can see a sense of movement. It's really interesting.
So, amazing thing that happened for me because of the sales journals. When I went into sales, I only went into sales because I didn't want to travel anymore. And I don't know if any of you have ever traveled extensively, but I was home 3 weeks out of 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it does something mentally to you. It just totally messes you up. And so when I went into sales, I was terrified. I had an opinion of all the salespeople I've worked with on the support side of the business, and I didn't want to be known like they were known. I didn't want that reputation. So the only way that I could keep myself on track was to keep conversations recorded in my journal. I would, you know, make notes of the things that made me feel really good about calls, the things that were particularly challenging. And my whole client base was Fortune companies. So I was in every Fortune company in the Bay Area at one time or another. And that was tough for me. Because, you know, you walk into Hewlett-Packard, and it's intimidating. They have unlimited resources, unlimited funding, unlimited anything that they want. You know, they want a project, they just bring in people. And that wasn't my experience at all.
What was your perception of sales? You said you didn't want to be known as that, but what?
Used car salespeople, or somebody tricking somebody into doing something that they really didn't want to do. You know, they were fast talkers, very negative. And when I was on the floor working, I actually sold Jeff's dad typesetting equipment, the company that Dave works for, back in 1982. And it was an amazing process for me that I wanted people to be able to make decisions based on something that they would benefit from. So So the consultant sales in 1980 was not even heard of. Now you have this box, you sell that box because they have too many of them. So now the consultant sales people get rid of them, even though something else is much better for the client. Well, I couldn't do it. So it wasn't until I got into the travel industry that I realized that a lot of people in 1990 had left that whole sales attitude behind. It wasn't the talk faster, cover things up, don't answer questions that are deterrents. You know, I put everything out there and then leave it up to the client to figure out if it was something that they wanted to do or not do. So there's, very negative connotations in 1980 about salespeople. But for some reason, I never would play the game the way they did. And I always outsold everybody else in the region. And I think it was because I really cared enough about people to make sure that I was doing the best for them. And I think that's really the difference between, something that dawned on me a long time ago was that as sales position, as owning your own business, without you, other people can't do well. Right? So you have to acknowledge that what you're offering people is an opportunity to do something a lot better than they're doing without you. So there's one of the people who's not here today because a client said that they had to have a meeting at 10:30. And I asked them on the phone, so if you didn't make it until 12:30, would the client go away? And they were terrified to be able to say, I already have an appointment at 10:30. How about 12:30? Or 1 o'clock, whatever works for them, but I have an appointment already at that time. So this is something that not very many people understand. If you have an appointment, and I don't care if it's a coffee meeting, I don't care if it's a class, I don't care if it's going to a chamber function, and you don't keep that appointment, you are setting up permission for everyone else to do that to you. Right, so it's like a domino effect. You don't keep your appointments, you don't show up on time, you don't return phone calls, you're telling everybody else that that's okay. And that's what you get back. So if somebody says, I could only see you at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, how do you think the rest of the sales process is going to go?
Then there's a control.
Right. So do you want to enter a relationship where the client is always in control? You don't. It's not worth it. How many people are there in the Bay Area? Over 3 million? Is it 7? And there's going to be 50% more people living here in the next 5 years? Just next. People, need to put yourself in a compromised position to work with someone. Have people who respect you in your life, in every aspect, and don't let other people come near you. It's just not worth it. You know what? Don't return my phone calls. Keep breaking appointments. Don't give me the paperwork when I need it. Sorry, you're out of here. It's very freeing, and I want all of you to acknowledge that you are in the power position. Without you, your clients cannot do as well. So it's really important that you understand that, and you don't let other people control your time. Anyone have particular challenges this past month? Anything come up that was...
Well, that's my challenge, but it's just like a refocus. And that has a lot to do with people giving referrals or leads in general. And what I've decided to do, if it's somebody that says, I got this person that's in mass or whatever, I'll tell them, let's set up a Utopia or Neopolitan. And let's get together, because that tells me that both people are real serious. Because anybody can talk on the phone or whatever, but they're actually going to take the time, go out, meet, and we see what happens then. Also feels more comfortable for the prospect. And that's why I've made a basis policy right now. Anybody comes to me and says, hey, I got somebody who'd like me to meet, okay, set it up, sort of thing. Sure that I don't even want to see him. Something's
happening. David doesn't confirm appointments.
No, I don't.
Anyone else not confirmed?
Yeah. I wouldn't use
I didn't personally. I do if I've got a phone call meeting, I will send an email confirming it, and then after
that. You know what's odd? If I don't call people a week before the meeting, I send out an email. If I don't call people the week of the meeting, the attendance is half. So who loses? The people who show up. I can't afford not to confirm. So David sets an appointment. It doesn't matter if it's a week or 3 weeks ahead. You no. just go.
That's right.
And if they don't show up, he won't do business with them.
I don't call them back anymore. Now, if they call me and say they're running late, that's fine. Or they call hours where I can't make it, that's okay.
Would you schedule? But I'm wondering, too, because of the relationship, you have a relationship with a lot of people over a period of time, so when they hear your voice, part of them responding to who you are, maybe these are newer clients?
It's newer, yeah. A set of clients, current clients, people with relationships. You know, after a period of time, you know who's late, who's on time, how their habits are, and that's fine. But I have a couple of clients that are like 10, 15 minutes late. I know that. They're going to be there. They're just running late. That's fine. But
you know people's habits, but my challenge is I put in the email, please respond to this email to confirm your attendance. How many of you do that?
I didn't do that. That's right.
You're confirming she's reading your email.
But you know what? If you tell me you confirm that you're going to be there, then I don't make that extra call. Right? And it's how much do you acknowledge what other people are asking? So it's really important that you look at whatever you're doing, that's what you're attracting more of in your life. Mm-hmm. So if there's David, hard and fast. You don't show up, I'm not working with you. So how much time does David waste every month waiting for people?
Very little.
And in the Bay Area, we have the worst reputation. Mm-hmm. Everybody says, oh, cool, let's do it. Next week, give me a call.
Well, I think sometimes when I follow people, I'm actually surprised when I'm following them, especially from trade shows. I think most people, like, we'll do lunch. They never follow up.
Right.
I do. Somebody says, let's do lunch. Yeah. You bet I come.
Well, but it's that honoring the professional attitude, the business acumen, which most people do not even acknowledge. It's so important. And what I do is I try to bring people to Elite Leads who the majority of the people would do that anyway in the Elite Leads, because I put people through little hurdles before they ever get here just to weed out people that I don't want you exposed to. Then you don't know that I'm doing these things, but I do that on purpose because I don't want people in Elite Leads who are flakes. It helps no one. So think about how you're setting up your life. I think what happens is people end up, they have a job. They don't have a job. They start a business. It's Monday. It's next month. It's 3 months. It's a year. It's 5 years. They don't change what they're doing. They keep doing the same thing over and over again. And honestly, look at what you're doing and constantly analyze every month. What are you doing? What's working? How do you feel when you're with a specific kind of client? Like David loves drivers now. A year ago, he wanted analytical. You learn it your way. I mean, you know what? If you have an affinity to working with like Cherub Youth, getting them into their first home, it's a cool market. What class was that we had? There were out of six people on this side of the table, five mortgage brokers, and not one did the same thing.
Oh, that was.
What was that?
Something really is recent.
Was it Karen's talk?
Yes, it was.
Was it Karen Walker's?
I think so.
Yeah. On the how to present.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The specialty of having five mortgage brokers and not one doing the same thing.
Their specialty.
So it's you're working with first-time home buyers and trying to have people who have kids that are just entering that market, getting them to that level. Know where your comfort zone is, because when Cherub first came to Elite Leads, he was saying, people aren't showing up, they're not calling me, they're not giving me the time of day. I said, well, wait a minute. where is your sweet spot? What is it that works for you? Mm-hmm. I mean, David knows the quality of the people that he's working with, and, you know, he's not going to work with somebody who's a renter.
Okay.
All right? So eliminate as much of the extra stuff until you really fine-point who you want to work with. Right? And you can base it personality, income range, size of business, any way that you want. But be specific. And just because someone has money, that's not typically who you want to do business with. And Jake, you have, of your clients, 50% of them are always behind the eight ball.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's a tough business. Printing? No one ever plans for the printing. It's always the last thing people think of. So Dave has to make up for somebody else's poor planning. That's a tough job. So, you know, look at what you're doing and how you can start weeding out people by replacing them with people that are more ideal for you. So no specific sales challenge.
Well, it was really interesting that you talked about the things you talked about this morning, because I was reading a book very early this morning regarding code of honor and, you know, just the business practices, being to appointments on time and expecting that of others, and falls all in line with that.
Well, I have to tell you, you respect yourself when that's what you expect of others. And until I had elite leads, I was never on time for anything in my life. The big joke in the family was that I'd be late for my own funeral, which I probably still will be. Now, when you're on purpose in your life, time is really important. Mark, do you know what they say about people who are consistently late?
Yeah, that's something off balance in their life.
Exactly. So they're not congruent. Not necessarily. Most often, it is that what they're doing does not resonate with who they are. Mm-hmm. Right? So they're doing a business, a job, or something that doesn't fit them personally. And when I was in sales, I had a really hard time ever being on time. Really tough time. When I started lately, I've never been late. I've never missed a late, late meeting 14 years because of an illness. Isn't that amazing? I've only missed because of vacations. And I think that's a good reason.
I generally feel that if you're late, or say you call someone or do something and you don't do it, that you're showing that you don't care or value either that person and what they, who they are, what they're doing, or the opposite, what you're saying, you know, value what you're doing, your service or product, right? Something's off. So you're relaying one of those two messages, which is obvious.
So the sales journal, please promise me you get the journal, you write in it. I don't care whether it's your approach calls, your in-person calls, everything that you do. And what worked for me is the things that are working great for you, you put them on the front. And then I flipped the journal upside down and wrote from the back to the front the things that were challenging. And if I was going to a client for the first time, I would read through all those challenges before I got to them. And I did that faithfully for the first 2 years. So that when I got to a client that was brand new, all the stuff that was tough was right there in front of my mind. Really over prepared. And I would much rather be overly prepared than walk in blindsided by something. Now, when I talk to people now, it is amazing at how people perceive leads groups. And all of you have been to other leads groups, you know what it's like. And so now it's like overcoming, you know, the multi-level marketing stigma. Right? When somebody says Amway, I mean, you all have a physical reaction to that. I know you do.
Yay.
You know, how do you overcome the stigma of somebody thinking, oh, you're just going to sell, right? You're just going to take my money. So positioning yourself as a consultative salesperson, that you're actually solving challenges. You know that in Russia, they don't have salespeople, right? If they had salespeople, do you think that things would be spread out a little more evenly in Russia? So they're either very wealthy and then people who don't have anything. And then all of a sudden, somebody who doesn't have anything gets really angry, and so they have an overthrow of the government, and then now the other people have money, and the people who did it don't. So you remember when Brezhnev was the Tsar of Russia? You remember that?
I don't think he was president.
They didn't call him president.
Yeah, it was president. Well, it was chairman.
It wasn't president. Anyway, his niece, Luba Brezhnev, is living in Redwood City. One day they're in power. The next day they're all leaving through underground tunnels to save their lives with just what they could carry. That's the difference between what we have, being able to have a sales concept that takes a product, a service, and explains to people why they want to do this. And all of you have a lot of competition. So you have to get really good at telling people why you. 90% of your job is based on the relationship that you create. 90%. I have always outsold people who had something less expensive and people who had more expensive. And it really is the relationship that you build with people. So the white sheet is that you are here today and next month. We'll get that later. I just printed the wrong page. We'll get it later. Should be the 6th. It is October 6th. Put that on your calendars for October 6th. Does everybody have their personality recognition? How many of you actually worked with personality challenges this month? Anyone come up with something? Anyone?
Yeah. I don't know if you can. I'm not that familiar with this one, but from my desk, I have a client that I'm working with. Partners. The one is I, which is a salesman, likes to talk, you know, a lot of feedback. You know, you have to really make a rapport relationship with them first before you move on to anything else. You know, and you have to talk for 30 minutes about whoever, which is tough for me because I'm a D, which is, I like, give me the facts, and then we'll talk
which
later.
Which is a driver. Right,
which is a driver. And well, his partner is the C, a controller. Person who has to have all the, you know, he deals with all the numbers and facts
and techie.
So they, you know, they don't match very well. So I spend half my time really in more of a counselor type of role, going over, you know, a lot of things, like in the 7 habits, mostly that type of material to mesh them together. So that then the first part is meshing them together, so we work on the business.
So. How do you handle it when you have a challenging personality that you're working with?
Well, I have a, I say that the controller is probably more challenging than, you know, than anything else, which is, what would that be, the analytical? I'm just an analytical person. Because he often doesn't move forward because he's too busy always analyzing everything. He doesn't move anywhere, and he always conflicts with the guy. So every time I start a session, I do what I call and that is what I feel like expressing. And I have a rule that you talk about it, whatever's on your mind, any feelings, any whatever. But you say it, and you say it once, and that's it. You don't continue to harp on it. And it helps get the personality out of the way. Everyone gets the emotion, the personality out of the way, so you can focus on the best.
So, going in the door, So you're our driver, right? So I'm like as close as you can get to a pure driver there is. My biggest challenge in working with anybody is that they start talking and, you know, yammering on about how it's done and all the details, and my ears hurt. I mean, it just drives me crazy. It's like, yes or no, get to the point. And that's the hard part of that, being a driver, because there's an impatience that, you know, we'll actually get up in the morning and go, I think we need a new porch. At the end of the day, it's done. All right? The analytical, 3 weeks later, is still trying to figure out which wood to use. The amiable is trying to figure out who's going to be unhappy because the old porch is going away and the new porch is coming in. So they're having a hard time making a decision. And the expressive is trying to figure out how to make it bigger, prettier, so that everybody in the neighborhood is going to be jealous. So how do you position yourself so that everybody is on the same page? And that's really what understanding personality. DISC has a lot of value. Now, I actually look at all these things, Enneagrams, anything that I can come up with, because everything brings more value and makes it easier for you to do what you need to do with less effort. So the more into personality recognition that you can get, the deeper you get, Wilson is the easiest one to use. Without a doubt, it is the easiest one to figure out. So what I want you to do is think about what would happen if you go into a meeting and every person at the table is a different personality?
What would happen?
What would happen? How would you handle that?
I think it's important to recognize that because they have a different personality, that's okay. And to learn how to communicate with the different personalities is very important. And that's what helps me is being a D, is that, okay, my goal is to learn how they communicate and communicate with them. If that's my goal, is to learn how to communicate with them, then I will always communicate what I want. But if I make it my focus to get my message across instead of listening and figuring out how to communicate it, and it will work, you'll never get
your
message.
So let's take it to a different perspective. While you're talking to the analytical, you give them facts, specific information. While you're talking to the amiable, you're addressing the issues as to why they need to make the decision to make everyone happy, because if they don't make the decision to do something, somebody's really unhappy. So amiables just want everybody to be happy. And they think that by not making the decisions, they're going to stay away from conflict. What you need to do is point out how there's more conflict if they don't do a decision. So a lot of HR managers are amiable. There's a lot of them. They've got that amiable, analytical thing going on. They're probably one of the most, they're more responsibility, less credit in a company than any position.
I see that changing, though, because it's being required of especially in the larger companies, of HR people to be much more of a business partner, and the amiable folks are falling by the wayside. They're going back to smaller companies and get much more of a driver type personality,
right,
in big HR
it's
companies.
Necessary.
It really is. But it's a long time coming.
So if you think about it, what is a CPA? Personality.
Absolutely.
People are attracted to something that typically suits their personality. A lot of people fall into a position, a job, without any thought of their personality. What are attorneys?
Drivers.
Right? Great orators, to point, on purpose. It's like, bang, 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 that's it, right? bankers. Amenable. Now, the difference is, and this is why it's such a struggle for bankers. Bankers typically, up until 10 years ago, you would walk into the bank and say, I want to open up an account. And a banker's job was, what checks do you want? What kind of account? How many checks are you going to write? That's all they had to do. That was a banker's job. Today, those same bankers, those poor, amiable people, have quotas, which means they have to be more driver.
It doesn't money laundering.
They don't have the mental capacity to shift from that, you're coming to me, I'm just being nice, you want to like your banker, to that hard quota. Every month they have to meet a standard, and it's not an easy standard, which it would be typically like a corporate salesperson's kind of position. So if you think about who your clients are, where is your comfort level? What is it that you want to be able to do with your clients? So you can start thinking about if your comfort level is driver. I love working with drivers. David, same thing. After it took him about 6 months, then all of a sudden he shifted and he goes, okay, I like drivers. Right? Because they'll tell you right now, I'm interested, I'm not interested. Today, next week, whatever, and you can count on it. So think about what you like. So when Louise first met me, Louise has been in Wheatley for 11 years. And I wanted to help everyone, and I thought it was my responsibility to help everyone. I took it on. I thought I could fix everybody. Now, I give you the information. It's totally up to you what you do. So Lori is more of an amiable. Right? It's a tough position that you're in to be an amiable and try to get people to have the responsibility to do something to bail them out of the trouble they're in. So what happened to me is that I went from analytical to amiable and then right up to driver. I never played around in expressive because there was nothing that I did that made me have to have those skills. So we can change, we can move around in the personality profiling, and the more aware of this that you are, the more adaptive you become. The best salespeople are adaptive. So when you're talking with a driver, you start thinking the way a driver would. And I have no idea where this came from, but the first sales call I ever went on, I thought, if I was sitting on his side of the desk, what would be important to me? What would make it easier for me to do that job? And that's how I did so well in sales from day one. Because I never thought of it as selling this equipment to that person who could pay for it. Was it, how do I become the problem solver? And that's really where all of you are going, isn't it? So, have these with you all the time. Before you go into an appointment, just look to see, you know, when you're thinking about, okay, words that they use. Before you go to see them face to face, you're going to know what personality they are. So kind of review. How do you want to talk with each personality before you start the conversation? And you might even have this, if you're taking notes, and I hope you are when you're doing any kind of sales presentation, you know, have it on the inside of your notebook so you can just kind of glance at it periodically as you're having the conversation. So, in a presentation, now all of you can go from presentation to close. There's no reason why you can't.
Meaning?
You got people, presentation is what? Out of Baja, right? Right?
Don't let them on the plane.
Sorry. sorry. Didn't include the flight back.
Let's make a joke about that.
You actually start out at the dinner, though.
Right, you do. The majority of the people. To go down to actually tour. So there is the people, there are many places.
What percentage buy when they actually, if they say they're going down there, what percentage?
Once they're down there, and the channel knows, I mean, large urban city, about 75%. But, you know,
on our plane, there was one person that did buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was people that were on the plane that already had bought at the dinner and bought more property while they were down there.
Yeah, I think it's more where the screening happens is really here, because people get scared and miss things about buying. So once they're there, they either know about it, they've done the research, they're comfortable. So the prices are gone by the time they're there, and then it's all right.
Yeah, so usually when you're looking at a property, when you have something that's that softer sell, right? It's much easier. A tangible for hard to sell. What Mark does. How do you quantify? You know what Lori does? How do you quantify? So you have to know going in how you prepare for doing this. So your ask presentation, how many different kinds of presentations are there? Louise, what do you do when you do a presentation?
There are certain things I have to present, so that's standard. To go through certain things, but I always ask what the clients need. What
are their goals?
What do they want to do with this? How do they want to do it? You need to know what their point of view is.
So, logically, what's in it for them? That's the first and foremost question that you want. When you're doing a presentation, you have to keep that in mind. What's in it for them? So presentation could be a show-and-tell kind of presentation. It could be take them on a tour like Rita does. It could be an organizational chart so that, you know, Jerry could actually walk them through a process. We're starting here. This is the end result. What is it that we're going to do with this process? Now, the hard thing is for all of you not to give away too much during the presentation. All right? So if you give everybody all the answers in a presentation, what are you doing? You're educating them. When you educate people, you are not necessarily selling them. A lot of people think that educating is selling. It's not. When you educate someone, you're giving them all the ammunition they need to go out and talk to everybody else. When you're selling them, you're giving them the reasons why they're going to do business with you. So, when I talked to each of you about elite leads, did I ever mention the competition? Not once. But did I say we need in a conference room? I didn't say not in a restaurant like B&I. So the difference is I'm educating you as to why you're going to do business with me. Not educating you on what a lead group is. That make sense? In a presentation, what should you include? Lori, what's part of your presentation? What kinds of things?
Well, she mentioned the needs analysis, of course. Of course, the description of who we are, what type of products and services we have to offer.
So, pretty much the why me.
What differentiates us from other companies? Yeah.
So, in the presentation, why me, why now, and what do you absolutely need to know? Right? In a presentation, you're not getting down to the nuts and bolts of how you're going to work and what hours you're going to work and, you know, all those little nitty details. The presentation is just, why me? Why now? And what do they really need to know about working with you? That's it. So, do you time your presentations? Do you tell people,
I mean, we're going to spend a half an hour. We're going to spend 45 minutes. This will take about an hour. All right, and then respect that. But that's all part of being a professional salesperson, that you say, this is how much time it's going to take. In Cherub's case, it might take 2-3 appointments, right? Because you can't do it all. Sometimes they forget to bring stuff, or you know, whatever it happens to be. So prepare people up front. And I used to say on my first Q&A, I would spend 15 minutes. And exactly 12 minutes into the presentation, I said, we have about 3 minutes left. Is there anything else you need to cover? When you review your assets, that's why you, right? And it doesn't mean your education. It doesn't mean you've got the best company in the world. All of you have heard Warren say, I'm going to introduce you to a CPA. It's the best CPA in the entire world. Is that believable? He loves people. But what if Warren were to say something like, I'm going to introduce you to the CPA. Of all the clients I've ever sent to CPA, they have saved the clients on an average of 50-20% on what they ended up paying in taxes. Does that quantify why they're good? So when you're talking about you and your assets, it's what have you done for someone else? Why is somebody going to work with you? Where are the benefits? Of course, you need to review their objections, their concerns. One of the things that I found early on in sales, I don't care who you're working with, there's going to be objections.
Objections.
They're educational, aren't they?
Right. Well, they show interest.
They show interest, but it's really educational. How well informed is the person you're talking with? The more objections they have, the closer they are to working with you. So if you can get someone to start objecting, you're actually getting them closer to the yes. Now, there are specific concerns and objections that people might have that can't be solved. Money. Right? You're working with someone, they don't have a budget. Maybe they need to do something that they haven't budgeted in, they haven't factored it in, but they need it. So what happens if you become a solution to that? All of you know about factoring? Factoring? Mark?
Yep.
Let's say you're working with someone and they don't have ample cash flow. There are companies who will actually take assets, so pretty much, and actually factor in cash so that you can get an influx of cash. Take accounts receivable, and it's 4%. Same almost as if somebody put the original amount on a credit card. So if you have somebody that you're working with that doesn't have enough cash, there are easy means to get them cash now so they can make better decisions and then to get them bankable. So a lot of times what happens is people are so busy working with what's in front of them or what screams the loudest, that they're not taking a step back to look at how to run a business as a business. They're not looking at their operations. It's one of the things that Mark does so well is he gets people to take a bird's eye view of what's going on so that they can make better decisions. Now, I think that all of us have a responsibility to everyone we work with, no matter what we're doing with them, to figure out what else they need to have a better lifestyle, business, clients, cash flow, everything. So you constantly drill down, what else do you need?
I also think if they bring up money as an issue, that generally that you didn't get across your benefit very well, because money is the easiest thing to object to. So people usually throw out money, whether it is or not, because it's a polite way of saying, I don't like you. You know, it's a personality conflict, or I don't believe in your service, so money becomes much easier to use as an objection.
Yeah, I've never known anyone who can't figure out how to fix a car if it breaks down and they have to have transportation to get to work. Right? So when there's a need, they find a way of fulfilling it. So money really isn't a legitimate objection, because there are solutions. So just know whether it's a stall tactic or whether it's really an objection. Now, even in selling to Fortune companies, you know, companies have budgets, right? And if there's no money in the budget, there's no money in the budget, and they're not going to do anything. So I used to get really clever and find other departments who had money, and then have people bargain for next year's money. So switch it around until they ended up getting the money they needed to be able to make better decisions today. One of the things I used to do when I was selling type saving equipment is Chase Manhattan would actually do a lease on equipment if they had $50,000 in the bank, and it's all I needed to know. So I would get people to borrow money from all of their family, relatives, friends, anybody, and put $50,000 in the bank to get them approved on the lease, and then get money back after the lease was approved. You know, people who were spending $3,000 a month on outsourcing services that were able to spend $750 a month and make an extra $2,000 a month, that's a pretty smart decision. So look at what you're doing more objectively and how you can help people, you know, take the rules and make them apply to who you're working with.
Yeah, the other thing with budgets, I used to work a lot. Everything's in the budgets. But what I was representing there, and they said it wasn't in the budget. I would get them to open up the budget and say, well, this is more important than the stuff we have here. And so I was actually getting them to remove what they had budgeted, put mine in. Well, Brian's in the industry, but consulting.
Well, one of the things that I used to do is I would go in, instead of having a lease on my equipment, I would get them to take their copy machines and print presses and everything else and then refinance it on one lease. So instead of having, you know, $700 payment here and $1,200 here and $2,500 here, boil it all down and save them a third of their payments every month. You know, there's lots of ways of taking and figuring out how to help people make better decisions. You know, I mean, people don't realize, how many of you go out to dinner at least once a week? At least, right? Have you ever stopped to figure out what that costs? When Jerry Hart first came to Elite Leads, he ate every meal out. Do you know how expensive that is? By the time he left the tip, it was no less than $50 a day. And I have to sit there and figure it out, all right? Is it worth $50 a day?
No.
So, yeah, pretty clever about microwave dinners. Much better. Good job.